Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The East Coast is sweltering. The power is going out. Weren't we supposed to fix that grid by now? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reputation Defender, monitoring, protecting, and helping improve your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. ReputationDefender.com/market. And by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at Progressive.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke, in for Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, July 6th. If you have been on holiday, welcome back. There have been scattered power outages along the East Coast today, parts of New York, D.C., Philadelphia. Utilities there are trying to manage record demand for power amid record high temperatures. It has been almost 7 years since the last big blackout on the East Coast, and we have had plenty of talk about upgrades. Marketplace's Elisa Roth wanted to know, how prepared are we?
Before I left home this morning, I turned off the air conditioners and pulled down the shades. Electric companies up and down the East Coast have been reminding customers to do that so we don't knock the system out of commission. Jim Owen is a spokesman for the Edison Electric Institute, which is a trade association for investor-owned power companies. And he says there have been a lot of improvements since the big blackout 7 years ago.
Basically, what we're talking about is just a steadily increasing investment in distribution and transmission facilities.
New York's power company, Con Edison, says it's spent more than $10 billion on these kinds of upgrades since 2003.
It's just going to make your system stronger, and it's going to make it more resilient. It's going to give you increased capability to move power to where it's needed most on days like today.
But your electric company might not know where to move that power. Right now, the only way it knows the power's out is when somebody calls them. Maria Illich studies power grids at Carnegie Mellon University, and she says there's a lot of talk about upgrading equipment, but what we really need to do is upgrade other things like computer programs and communications that make it all work.
Much can be improved in terms of doing things during abnormal conditions by relying on near real-time data and software which would manage that data.
That would help power companies figure out what kinds of adjustments to make to keep the juice flowing and the air conditioners running, which is what we all want on days like today. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
If you bought one of those big fat rolls of forever stamps, you are feeling savvy. Today, the post office asked for another rate increase, bringing a first-class stamp from 44 to 46 cents. The last two-cent increase was only a little over a year ago. And not only are mailing costs rising faster than inflation, the post office wants to eliminate Saturday service. These are all attempts to get control of losses that could reach $240 billion in the next decade. But Marketplace's John Dimsdale says the budget balancing efforts might just dig the hole deeper.
In addition to the first-class rate hike, USPS is asking for an 8% increase for magazine deliveries and a 5% boost for catalogs. That's bad news for the mail-order menswear company Paul Frederick in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania. Chief Operating Officer Alan Abbott says the company mails 9 million catalogs a year, and the post office is chasing away his business.
It will do exactly the opposite of what the Postal Service is hoping it will do. It will reduce the amount of mail we send. It will cause them to lose more money than they're currently losing.
The Magazine Publishers of America will challenge the rate request. They rely on the post office for 90% of their deliveries. The MPA's Jim Cregan says a postage increase will drive more magazines onto iPads and other mobile devices.
It's not the case as was 15 years ago where the Postal Service could raise rates and people would have no place else to go and they would just have to shrug and swallow it.
Despite rate increases of more than 50% over the past decade, the post office continues to lose money, nearly $4 billion last year. You can blame that on the internet. Canadian researcher Robert Campbell says post offices in other countries have done better because of fewer regulatory restrictions on the services they can offer.
Everything from selling cell phones and phone plans to travel insurance, doing currency exchanges, selling mortgages.
Today's USPS rate hike request will be reviewed by the Independent Postal Rate Commission. Any approved increases would go into effect next January. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
They already have the world's tallest building and a giant indoor ski resort. The Middle Eastern city-state of Dubai also wanted to be a world leader in higher education. One of the key players in that vision, Michigan State University. But MSU now says it is closing its undergraduate university in Dubai, putting an end to a money-losing experiment. It's tough news for Michigan State and 100 students who need to find a new place to go to school. But for American universities, the race to go global continues like never before. Reporter Jeff Horwich has the story.
On a New York University Facebook page, international students share their excitement about starting college. But they're not headed to New York. They're going to Abu Dhabi, where NYU is about to open a campus. This is not about American students seeking an exotic semester abroad. Ben Woldofsky is the author of The Great Brain Race, How Global Universities Are Reshaping the World. He says for schools like NYU, Michigan State, and Georgetown, this is about taking a real Western education to the people who want it and are willing to pay for it.
A Georgetown degree from the School of Foreign Service in Doha is exactly the same. I mean, the piece of paper does not say Georgetown/Doha. You know, it just says Georgetown.
The universities collaborate with the host government. In the case of Georgetown or NYU, the government simply pays for everything up front, buildings, faculty salaries. Karen Fisher of the Chronicle of Higher Education says some countries have been known to fund campus projects back in the States. But Fisher says when Michigan State went to Dubai in 2008, the struggling city-state made the school take on a chunk of the risk.
Basically, Dubai floated loans to foreign universities and said, we expect that eventually you're going to pay us back.
The bad economy hammered the school's recruiting efforts. The Michigan State campus, built for 1,000, attracted only 100 students this year. The school lost millions, according to Dubai media accounts. It's a blow for Dubai, but author Ben Woldofsky calls Michigan State's failure a blip on the radar.
What we have is what people want. They want American PhDs.
He says Western universities have 160 branch campuses, with more in the works. Even as the Middle East cools, India and China are growing as places to earn a diploma that says, Made in the USA. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
And what lessons did we learn today on Wall Street? Class begins when we do the numbers. Dry America is turning wet, and money has a lot to do with it. From the Carolinas to the Plains, there are states and counties that still restrict alcohol sales, but those restrictions are disappearing. Winona, Texas, population 600, is the first town in its county to allow alcohol sales since Prohibition. Winona's mayor is Rusty Smith. Rusty, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Bill.
Your town had been dry for about 90 years. Why take up the issue of going wet now?
I think it's just a changing of the times. I think some of the younger residents of our area are for it. I guess just alcohol doesn't have the stigma that it used to have associated with it. And we've also got a lot of folks that, you know, in this area now that come in from out of town, out of state, where a lot of states, the notion of a dry county or a dry area is ludicrous.
Sounds like a time machine if you're from out of town.
Right.
Well, it's been legal now for a few months. You can buy and sell alcohol. What's it done for your economy?
Well, for our local town, it's a great benefit. Our sales tax revenues were a couple thousand dollars a month because we only had a couple businesses in town. Once these businesses opened up, it's brought quite a bit more. It equates to about a $10,000 a month increase in sales taxes. So for us, that means a lot of projects that have been on hold we're getting to do now, such as road repairs. We've just started those projects and make sure we get signs put out to let everybody know that the local sales tax dollars are what's paying for those.
How much of the pro-alcohol argument was economic?
On my side of it, that was the majority of it. you know, the economics that it brings back into our county and back into our city was a big deal. The first business that opened is a store that has been, it was a service station at one time, but since I've lived in town, it had been closed. I was there when they opened the doors, and that's the first time I've been able to walk into that establishment in the 20 years I've been in town. That was exciting to see that retail business coming back to us.
Well, how do you feel about this, Mayor? I mean, opponents said, yeah, selling alcohol will bring in business and taxes, and that's not worth compromising our values.
It's one of those, I guess you call it a moral dilemma that everybody faces. You know, it's, I said through the whole election, I'm not there trying to change anybody's mind. The folks that are against it are against it, but you know, we've called it a dried up town. We had two businesses, you know, a restaurant and a gas station in town, and that's all we had prior to this. So I actually look at this as helping us to revitalize our town.
Has there been any result of passing this alcohol law that has surprised you?
Actually, I guess the surprise is the amount of money we are bringing in. It's actually more than I expected it to be.
Uh-huh.
We're bringing in probably twice what I thought we might bring in from this. So,
after the law passed, did you pick up a six-pack yourself?
I did. I visited each store as they opened at least once to see the stores, and wasn't the last six-pack I bought, and I still try and split my business between them.
Yeah, I guess as mayor, you have to shake a lot of hands, cut a lot of ribbons, and now drink a lot of six-packs. Mayor Rusty Smith of Winona, Texas, where since November you can now buy or sell a drink. Rusty, thank you.
You're very welcome. I appreciate you having me on.
Doesn't that music sound lazy and summery? Summer travel season is such a treat if you rarely get to leave town. Not so fun if you travel for a living. Today, we start a series called Road Warriors. Producer Michael Rayfield follows business travelers who live in airport lounges and generic hotels and stale conference rooms, and they get through it all with the help of their own private music soundtrack. We begin our series with the CEO of the internet radio site, Pandora.com.
My name is Tim Westergren. I'm the founder of Pandora. And when I'm on the road, I listen to Late by Ben Folds, one of my favorite road songs.
Under some dirty words on a dirty wall, eating takeout by myself, I played the shows, got back in the van and put the Walkman on.
It's a very contemplative, kind of moody song. Makes me kind of nostalgic. And when I travel, I feel that way generally. When I'm on planes or trains or when I'm kind of out and about and disconnected from, you know, my home, I find that that song is sort of a great soundtrack for me.
Like pathetic stars, the truck stops and the rock club walls are always new. You saw them too, but you never will again. It's too late.
Images and things are passing you by, and I think it gives you some distance from your life. And for me, that tends to cause me to think about things sort of more broadly and think back and think forward. And it's often private time, too. I'm mostly alone. Sort of alone with my thoughts, so I tend to go there. It's a time when I was composing music actively, I'd write a lot of music.
The songs you wrote got me through a lot. Just want to tell you that, but it's too late.
I started playing music when I was a little kid. Very young, and pretty much as far back as I can remember, it's kind of been a companion for me my entire life. And now it's kind of my life's work in the context of Pandora. So it kind of means everything to me. And I think it's a unique art form that seems to be utterly universal, that has no respect for, you know, geographic, social, economic barriers or boundaries. And it has an ability to affect everybody in the same powerful way. And it's really fun to be kind of playing in that sandbox now the way we are.
Peace of mind. You can listen to some more of Tim Westergren's Tunes for the Road and suggest a few of your own by heading to marketplace.org. Just click on Road Warriors. Coming up, a kinder, gentler health insurance.
Roughly 40% of the quality form is dedicated to empathy. Things like, did you give an empathetic statement to the customer? And how many times in the past week have you forgot to do that?
We bring you that story because we care. But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street ended a 7-day losing streak today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average pushed up half of 1%, 57 points, to close at 9,743. The NASDAQ hiked a tenth of 1%, that's a gain of 2 points, to close at 2093. The S&P 500 rose half a percent, ending 5 points higher at 1028. Energy companies gained some ground as oil prices inched higher. ExxonMobil pumped up 1.5%, ConocoPhillips oozed up 0.75%, and Chevron ticked up a third. Markets were higher overseas as well. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to a still measly 2.93%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the new Harvard Business Review. The July-August issue is on newsstands now, featuring an in-depth interview with Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. Let us give you the business 24 hours a day. Just tap marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest financial news and reports from around the globe on how the economy is affecting our lives.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. Right. U.S. Census Bureau Director Robert M. Groves gives an update on the progress of the 2010 count at the National Press Club. Need some exercise after the long weekend? The running of the bulls starts up tomorrow in Pamplona, Spain. And happy birthday, Ringo Starr. He'll be 70. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bill Radke, in for Kai Rizdahl.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.
We apparently grossed out one of our listeners. We told you last week the Food and Drug Administration wants farmers to lay off feeding cows, pigs, and chickens antibiotics. Turns out too much antibiotics, like too much of anything, is bad for animals, human and otherwise. As I say, this farming practice totally grossed out listener Tracy Ewing of Indianapolis.
They feed the cows and pigs antibiotics so that they eat more and produce more meat at slaughter. I guess that's why farmers can claim they're not using growth hormones. They're using something even more inherently dangerous, and in the process have changed very nasty bacteria into antibiotic-resistant superbugs. Kudos. Dr. Frankenstein would be proud.
It's alive!
You were also lively when it comes to our series from China. Marketplace reporter Scott Tong looked at China's economy 30 years after the one-child policy. Listener Min Padoff of Atlanta left China in 1998. She's been following the changes in her homeland from afar.
Being an only child born in the 70s in Shanghai, I can relate to some interviewees' perspectives, and I witnessed, but not realized till much later, many drastic social changes with the implementation of such a policy.
Listener Alan Doyle from Davis, California, wanted to hear more about the original motivation for the one-child policy, fewer people.
I was disappointed that the growth of population was dropped from the conversation. It's fantasy to think that we can continue to grow indefinitely. We haven't disproven the limits to resources.
You can listen to all of Scott Tong's stories on the one-child policy, see a full timeline, and a great slideshow at our website, marketplace.org. Our final listener letter is about the limits of optimism. We told you that a measure of consumer confidence plunged in June. Susan Tavis of Janesville, California says, yeah, no kidding.
Every time we saw the live footage of oil gushing and animals dying, people unemployed, oil executives trying to explain the unexplainable, well, we didn't just feel like throwing a party or whooping it up.
Well, here's hoping July gives us something to whoop about. If you have a comment for us or a critique or a question, go to our website. It's marketplace.org. Just click on contact. Well, I hope you had a terrific three-day weekend and that you did not have to spend it scouring the new healthcare.gov website that just launched. If you did look at the site, you saw the government's first attempt to make shopping for health insurance more like shopping. Eventually, you'll be able to compare insurance companies on factors like customer service, something health plans were once able to ignore. What did they care if you were happy? You weren't the one choosing them. It was your company's benefits department they had to please. Under health reform, insurance companies should pay more attention to the place where they and their customers meet, on the telephone. Marketplace's Gregory Warner visited a customer service call center in Kentucky and sent this report.
The last time you called customer service at your health insurance company, on the other end of the line might have been someone from the Convergys Corporation. Convergys is a company that other companies hire to handle their customer service calls. They answered 1 billion calls last year at call centers all over the world. They answer the phones for insurance companies, but also credit cards and banks and cell phones. They are, in their words, a relationship management company.
Okay, I'm going to let you guys in here. I got to keep buzzing because an alarm will go off.
Jeff Brown runs this call center in Erlanger, Kentucky. He leads me through a sea of headsetted heads and 500 cubicles. Floating here and there are posters scribbled in magic marker. Mike's team rocks the world. And, smile, Jeff stops at a desk and clicks on a mouse.
So the first screen that we're looking at is the way that we actually record calls?
You know, for training and quality purposes? Sorry, just had to say that.
Absolutely.
And this is where it is.
This is it.
This is where Jeff listens to calls and scores them off a checklist called a quality form.
Roughly 40% of the quality form is dedicated to empathy. Things like, did you give an empathetic statement to the customer? And how many times in the past week have you forgot to do that?
Because more than any other callers they deal with here, health plan customers that Convergys surveyed say they don't think their insurance company cares about them or about their health. So Convergys, being in the relationship biz, launched empathy workshops. They hired empathy coaches to roam the aisles and swoop down on agents when they flounder. Are you the empathy trainer?
I am.
Okay.
My name is Susan. Nice to meet you.
Susan Hubin.
I'm glad you came. It's nice.
Well, thanks a lot. Susan Hubin does not miss a chance to interject a little kindness.
That kind of gives me a dance of joy.
Wow, dance of joy. That's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, but...
Or a big heap of kindness into every encounter. She teaches new employees things like the four components of a successful apology and how to smile with their voice. Then Jeff Brown listens back to the tape of the call and scores the performance.
And then the performance is also pay for performance. So if you're performing high, you're going to get paid more.
Which means that the next time you call customer service and you hear,
I care, I understand.
I understand your frustration regarding this issue, or I hear what you're saying. I do apologize that you've had to go through this many times.
That's the sound of an agent trying not to get fired, and your giant insurance company trying to improve their relationship with you. To
lack in loyalty. And they've got to do that now.
Christine Kowalczyk is a vice president at Convergys. She says that the day after President Obama signed the health care reform bill, new calls to the center spiked 20%. And the subject of those calls was enough to strike fear into the hearts of the biggest insurance companies.
Now they were asking us, can I drop out of my plan? When will my premiums go down? I want to use the government plan. How do I do that?
That government plan, those government-run exchanges we keep hearing about, don't start until 2014. But Christine says that people are starting to shop around. Millions who now have insurance through their employer could switch to the exchanges where they have more choice.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time as a customer of a health plan when I have a choice if I'm not getting treated properly.
Part of building that relationship in this new age of choice means health plans reaching out to customers more directly. Convergys even made a demonstration video about this. It shows a hypothetical customer getting a text message from his health plan.
I have a text from Attentive Healthcare. I better call them now.
Attentive Healthcare. Hello, Mark.
The super sensitive robot that answers the phone not only knows Mark's name, but why he's calling, and tracks his habits enough to advise him to increase his health savings account deduction before it runs out. And then it does the increase for him, all in a 2-minute phone call.
Wow, I'm glad that's taken care of.
But don't let this nice guy act fool you. Insurance company profits are still based on getting as many healthy people as possible and keeping sick people to a minimum. In a world where insurance companies track our behavior closer than a jealous lover, companies can use those same tracking tools to pick and choose the customers they want to treat well.
It segments their customer population.
Christine says Convergys already does this for a large cell phone company. When you call customer service and you punch in your account number.
If I spend a lot of money and you don't, you better believe they should treat me better than you, right? So they may offer me a free coupon or a free month's worth of service, where you, they may just say, thank you for being a great customer.
Under the new rules of healthcare reform, insurance companies can't drop you if you're sick or very expensive for them to cover. So if someday in the future you call your health plan and find yourself on eternal hold or lost in a phone tree maze, just maybe that's the sound of your health plan trying to get you to break up with it. In Erlanger, Kentucky, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Are you nice enough to pass the call center kindness test? Visit our website where you can answer a sample call. Test your own empathy quotient. We also give you an insider's guide to beating the call center system, all the secrets from the other side, when to dial, what to say. It's all at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And this final note, today's World Cup semifinal between Uruguay and the Netherlands is in the books. And I won't spoil it for you in case you have the game taped. The other semifinal is tomorrow between Spain and Germany. So what do you suppose they're thinking about at Germany's IFO Institute of Economic Research in Munich? Yes, they have just issued a paper on how evolutionary finance is like soccer. Turns out in both disciplines, new strategies become popular. The trend in soccer now is short surgical passes. But eventually, in soccer, as in finance, the hot strategy gets discovered and exploited and becomes as popular as a credit default swap. Oh, and the Institute's other finance analogy? Apparently, the richest soccer clubs tend to win. Sound familiar? That's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 57 points, half of 1%. The Nasdaq added 2 points, a tenth of 1%. The S&P 500 gained 5 points, half of a percent. Thank you to Jennifer Collins and Ethan Lindsay on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report. You'll get the latest in business and economic news. Next time on this program, after an auto factory closes, should workers stay or go?
It's going to be tough leaving, and I didn't want to leave. But sometimes when the writing's on the wall, you got to use your head, not your heart then.
I'm Bill Radke. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us.
Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.